It's my very special privilege this morning to introduce my friend and companion in the field of Old Testament studies, Dr. Sandra Richter. I have known her through most of the 9 years that she has joined the faculty of Asbury Theological Seminary. I have heard her lecture. I have heard her preach. I have read several of her publications. And let me tell you, she is an exceptional scholar and communicator. I have no intention this morning to take up any of her time with a lengthy, albeit well-deserved, introduction. Perhaps just a few highlights will give you some indication of her accomplishments. Dr. Richter is a graduate of Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and earned her Ph.D. degree from Harvard University in their renowned Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations department. While at Harvard, in the mid-90s, she became an award-winning teaching fellow and adjunct instructor at both the university and the Divinity School. She is a field-trained archaeologist, having created Asbury Seminary's Israel Studies program in historical geography and archaeology. And her newest book, The Epic of Eden, A Christian Entry into Old Testament, was recently published through InterVarsity Press. In addition to her academic achievements, Dr. Richter served as pastoral minister for 10 years and still enjoys preaching in churches. And by the way, she is also a devoted wife and mother. Sandy, what can we say? You are a role model for all of us, and we are honored that you are sharing your heart with us this morning. Please welcome Dr. Sandra Richter.
Very kind. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Asbury College. Okay, let's try that again. Are you ready? Good morning, Asbury College. All right, you're supposed to be college students. I think you're mostly asleep. All right. I am honored to be here and just love getting the chance to come across the street every once in a while and see you folks. I love it when you come across the street, too. You know, you can ponder that for your future. This week, I've been invited to come because this week is Holy Week. This is the big week. And so Greg had asked me to come and to talk a bit about the issue of this Maundy Thursday night that is coming around tomorrow, that we have come to know as the Last Supper, that they knew as the Passover. So that's the topic for this morning. That's what we're interacting with. That's what we're looking at. And as you sit there with all of these thoughts racing through your minds, because you duck out tomorrow, right, and head home, with all of the packing you have to do and the last-minute projects you have to get in, let's pause for a few minutes and think about just this. It is Holy Week. These are the highest holidays of the Christian calendar. Now, our society hasn't quite figured that out yet. They're pretty sure Christmas is the high holiday, but it isn't. These are the high holidays. These are the days when the Christian must stop and say, "What happened?" When the Christian must remember. That is what we're called to do this week, to remember, to remember. Now, as we address the Last Supper, Maundy Thursday, the Passover meal, which is tomorrow, we need to set the stage. So let's do that. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 26, but we pick up the story on the very last week of Jesus' life on earth. Jesus has spent the bulk of his ministry up in the Northland and the Galilee. We're not quite ready for that one yet. Up in the Northland, in the Galilee. He is on the hinterland. He is a preacher on the edges. Now, he has done this intentionally. As you read through the synoptics, you hear that Jesus reserves his ministry for the hinterland because he knows. He knows that when he comes to Jerusalem, he is putting his life at risk. He knows that when he enters the circle of power of the Jewish leaders, that he becomes vulnerable to seizure and to execution. So the bulk of his ministry has been to the common people up in the Northland. But in this last week of his life, he chooses to come. Again, he knows what he's making himself vulnerable to. But in this week of the great Passover celebration, he comes. We celebrated his entrance just last Sunday. Palm branches waving. We shouted, "Hosanna, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." And what we were shouting was an ancient Hebrew formula, "Hoshianu, Hoshianu, save us, save us." And that's exactly what the people of Jesus' day were hoping and praying and expecting as this son of David rode into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey, the foal of a female donkey, exactly the formula attributed to Judah back in Genesis 49. All things were coming together. Now think about Jerusalem. This is the Passover celebration. The city is absolutely packed out. You need to think about the mall at Christmas time. You need to think about Ichthus on the Friday or Saturday night celebration. You need to think about Washington, D.C. on the bicentennial celebration. There is humanity everywhere. Every available space has been rented. Every front yard is full of squatters. Every guest room is full. Every inn is overflowing. You can smell the guy next to you on the street. And not only has all humanity come for the high holiday, but they have each brought with them, every extended family, a lamb for the sacrifice. So the city is cacophonous. There is noise and smell and scurrying about everywhere. Jesus enters the city and he heads for the temple. He spends the week healing the lame, touching the blind, and irritating the snot out of the Jewish leaders. He sits in the courtyard of the temple and he asks them questions they cannot answer. He probes them with data they can't believe this hick actually knows. He pulls them and tests them and exposes them for the whitewashed sepulchers that they have become. The tension is mounting. And mounting and mounting. And Jesus knows in this final week that his time is come. And so the great night of the Passover celebration arrives. And Jesus instructs his disciples to make the necessary preparations. Matthew 26, verses 17 through 19, we read, "Now on the first day of the festival of unleavened bread," this is another way to speak of the Passover, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?" And he said, "Go into the city to a certain man and say to him, 'The teacher says, my time is at hand. I'm to keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.' So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover meal." This is the holiday that becomes the backdrop for the Maundy Thursday that you're going to celebrate tomorrow. So what is the Passover meal? Well, it is the high holiday of the Jewish calendar. It is one of their most sacred nights, when the greatest act of redemption thus far known in human history is celebrated. It is the moment in which the Jewish community gathers to remember and to celebrate the Exodus. Passover is the Christmas Eve of the Jewish calendar. It's a sacred, magical night when all the family gathers, the doors are closed, the curtains are pulled, when the special meal is cooking in the oven, The traditional dishes are being placed on the table. Grandmother is there. The cousins are there. And as the evening closes, the magic begins. This is when the patriarch of every clan is required to gather his children and his children's children around his table and lead them in a ritual celebration and to ask them the question over and over and over again, do you remember? Do you remember what Yahweh did for us? This is the night that the patriarch leads his family through a liturgy. A liturgical celebration where the youngest one at the table asks a sequence of questions and the patriarch answers. It's the night in which the blood of a spotless lamb served to mark the households of those who believe so that the death angel would pass over. It's the night when the Jew remembers that the sons of Israel lived and the sons of Egypt died. It's the night that they remember that 2.5 million worthless, illiterate, scrungy, difficult slaves were ushered out of slavery into the marvelous light of freedom, into a covenant relationship with Yahweh. Now, in Jewish tradition, every Jew in Palestine and out is required, according to the Mishnah, to celebrate this night. And they celebrate it by remembering Yahweh their God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And according to the Mishnah, every Jew is required to celebrate as though he himself had walked out of bondage into freedom. That sacred night. The Passover is the night in which God rescued a nation of slaves. And that God is honored. A forgotten people. A gaggle of dirty, poor, illiterate Semites. A people who are only valued by the amount of labor their bodies could produce before they were laid in the ground. And this is the night when all eyes and thoughts turned toward the blood that was sacrificed, the blood that marked God's people, the blood that served as the gateway to freedom. And the essence, again, of this celebration is to remember the night a strong enemy was defeated and tens of thousands of souls stepped forth into life. That's the Passover. That is what Jesus and his disciples are doing on Maundy Thursday, and that is the night that Jesus chose to institute the communion meal. Why would Jesus choose the Passover Eve for this important juncture in the history of the church? Why would he choose this last night that he is on earth to institute his new covenant with his people on Passover Eve? I think the dots that need to be connected here are pretty obvious, aren't they? We're dealing now with a night of remembrance, a night in which holy, sacred things happen, a night in which the Jew reflected on God's deliverance on his behalf, and a night in which all eyes turned toward the blood. Jesus chooses this night to institute our communion meal. Now, what most of us don't realize, because we're Gentiles, is that there's actually a liturgy to the communion meal. There is a structure, a seder. In fact, that's what seder means. It means order. And it was accompanied, again, by this spoken word. And all of the folks sitting around the table at this Maundy Thursday Passover celebration knew that liturgy and had known it since they were knee-high to grasshoppers. So let's take a look at that structure. By the time of Jesus' day, the order of this meal can best be described as a four-part meal that was divided by four cups of wine. My kind of holiday. Yeah. Okay. The way the Mishnah describes it, the first part of this meal was the Kiddush. And this is the word for to make holy, to sanctify, to set aside. So what would happen is the patriarch of the clan would gather his family again on this very special night. And as the doors closed and the family gathered, he would raise the first cup of wine and he would bless the night and he would set it aside as holy. And the entire family would drink the first cup of wine. The second cup of wine marked the second part of the meal, kind of the appetizer time, when they would take bitter herbs and they would dip them in both a kind of peppery sauce and a sweet sauce. And the idea here is that this second part of the meal commemorated the bitterness of Egypt. They remembered the harshness of their bondage, and they would drink the second glass of wine. The third glass of wine actually is not drunk until after the third part of the meal. And the third part of the meal is the bulk of the meal. It's when they sit down to eat the Passover lamb. My husband is Greek. We do the lamb on Easter time in the backyard with the Greek music being piped out to all the neighbors. It's very embarrassing and very wonderful. It's just like the movie. It really is. Those are my in-laws. But there is nothing better than fresh lamb right off the spit, I promise you. So they would consume the lamb and all the special foods, and they would eat until their bellies were full. And over the course of this third part of the meal, the patriarch of the clan would begin the liturgy. And again, the youngest at the table would ask the questions, "Father, why do we set this night apart as holy? Father, why do we dip the bitter herbs? Father, why do we eat the lamb?" And so at a level that both adult and child could understand, they would tell the story, and they would tell it to each other, and they would remember, and they would celebrate. And then they would drink the third cup of wine. And this is known as the cup of redemption. Because with this third cup of wine, the Haggadah was told. And Haggadah just means the telling, the narration, the story. So with this third cup of wine, a prayer of grace would be prayed, and the bulk of the meal would be done. The fourth part of the meal is after all has been concluded, the family would stand and sing the great Hallel. And for those of you doing your Hebrew, Hallel, Hallelujah. Yes, the great praise, which is actually Psalms 115 through 18. They would sing a hymn, drink the fourth cup, and the meal was concluded. This is the liturgy. And by the time of Jesus' day, they had come to associate these four stages of the meal with the fourfold promise in Exodus chapter 6. And these are the four parts of this fourfold promise. Cup 1, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And cup 2, I will deliver you from their bondage. And cup 3, I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and great judgments. That's where the name cup of redemption comes from. And cup 4, then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So they remembered. This is the Passover, and this is what Jesus and his disciples were doing that Maundy Thursday evening. Now let's pause and think about the disciples for just a moment. They have had the headiest week of their whole lives. They are from East Kneecap, Palestine, okay? They are from way eastern Kentucky. They're from the hills of Arkansas. They're from that corner of South Carolina that no one realized had finally joined the Union, okay? They are backwoods boys, all right? They have entered Jerusalem with the Son of David, and the crowds have gone wild. They have stood in the temple and watched Jesus stand down the Pharisees and Sadducees and win the argument. They have seen the blind open their eyes. They have watched the lame walk. They are full of what has happened this week, and they are also fried. They're tired. This has been a long, involved emotional week. They have spent all day out ministering in the Galilean sun. By the time they get to the Passover meal,
They are tired, they are worn, they are spent, and they've had 3 cups of wine. So after their feet are washed and their heads are clean and they're lounging by the table with their bellies full of lamb and wine, they are listening to the liturgy running in the back of their minds. Kind of the same way you listen to the liturgy run in the back of your mind. And it's only if someone makes a mistake that you actually notice we're making progress. Well, Jesus is doing the liturgy. They've known it since they were tiny, until he comes to the third cup. And when he comes to the third cup, all of a sudden, the disciples notice, hey, he's saying the wrong words. Verses 26 and following. And while they were eating, we're at the third cup, Jesus took some bread, and after a blessing, he broke it and he gave it to his disciples. Take, eat, this is my body. What? And then he took the cup, the third cup of redemption. And after he'd given thanks, he gave it to them and he said, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for the forgiveness of sins. What in the world is Jesus doing? He's messed up the words. He's messed up the liturgy. And on top of that, my goodness, he's quoting Moses. He's quoting Moses. This is my blood of the covenant, which is to be shed on behalf of many. Folks, what is Jesus doing with this third cup? He is taking the cup of the Passover and he is reinterpreting it as the cup and the communion of the Christian. He is using the sacred celebration of Yahweh's deliverance of Israel from Egypt, and he is reapplying it to a nation that has not yet been born. He is telling his disciples that something greater than the Exodus is about to occur. It's happening right now, and I will be the instrument of this change. And then he takes it a step further. He says, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is to be shed on behalf of many. Moses says, at the foot of Mount Sinai, something very similar. We're in Exodus 24. Moses has just received the law. The Israelites are waiting on pins and needles at the foot of the mountain for Moses to come down. And Moses takes the book of the covenant, reads it in the hearing of the people, and he says to the people of Israel, on the day this nation was born, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do and we will be obedient. And so Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which the Lord has made with you, and with all these words. What happened at the foot of Mount Sinai is that the covenant between Yahweh and Israel was being ratified. It was being signed. It was being sealed. And the way ratification ceremonies happened in the ancient world is there had to be a sacrifice. And once the sacrifice was made, the blood was ritually applied and the two new partners vowed their oaths to each other. And then they roasted the animal they had sacrificed and they shared in a communion meal. That's how the ancients sealed a promise. That is how Yahweh sealed his promise with Israel. Jesus takes this quote from the foot of Mount Sinai and he places it in the Passover liturgy at the moment that the cup of redemption is to be shared. What did Moses say? Behold the blood of the covenant. What did Jesus say? This is my blood of the new covenant. Guys, the disciples would not have missed a Moses quote. They knew that Jesus was specifically pointing their minds back to Sinai. Why is he doing that? Because on that Maundy Thursday evening, in that Passover meal that we have come to call communion, Jesus is declaring a new covenant and a new people of God. Just as Moses sealed the Israelites to Yahweh at the foot of Sinai, Jesus, on the last night of his life on this planet, is sealing his people to himself. But this time, the blood that's being shed to seal, to ratify, to sign this covenant is not the blood of bulls and goats and lambs. This time, the oath is being sealed with the blood of God the Son. The promises on which you hang your lives are not sealed with the blood of lambs. They are sealed with the blood of God. Jesus takes this moment to identify the disciples and their spiritual descendants as the new people of God. He takes this moment to announce the new covenant, and he takes this moment to identify himself as the sacrificial victim whose blood will seal the oath. So, folks, as we step into this holy week, we are called to remember. We are called to remember. Tomorrow night, if you get home in time, you will attend a Maundy Thursday service, and you will be asked to share in communion. And you will pass to the person next to you one meager representation of the flesh of the ratification ceremony victim. And you will sip from the cup the blood of the sacrifice that has made you the new people of God. And all of this done with the third cup of redemption. Now, we haven't gotten to the fourth cup, have we? Because there was a fourth cup, even in the story of Jesus and the disciples. And so we pass to verses 29 and 30. As Jesus closes this meal, after he has shocked the socks off his disciples, and they are all sitting there going, I'm not going to ask. Are you going to ask? I'm not going to ask. You're going to ask. Jesus takes the fourth cup, and he puts it in the middle of the table. And he says, I say to you, which is New American Standard language for I swear to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And after singing a hymn, what hymn do you think it might have been? The great Hallel. They went out to the Mount of Olives. Now, you all know the story. You know that that was his last night. You know what will happen in the Garden of Gethsemane, and you know what will happen the night following. The disciples didn't. They didn't know what was coming, but Jesus did. And so he is making sure that they know that his promise is good. He is making sure that they know that they will see him again. His unfinished meal, his refusal to drink that fourth cup, is his promise to them and to us that this is not over yet. Because you remember what that fourth cup was in the Jewish Passover tradition? It's the cup of consummation. It's the cup where they know and he knows that we will be together forever. Then I will take you for my people. Exodus 6, verse 8. And I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. In the fourth cup, what Jesus is promising to them and what he's promising to us is a place at the table of the great celebration of the wedding feast of the Lamb, or dare I say, a place at the Passover table that awaits us in heaven, where the great patriarch of the clan gathers every child and every grandchild and every great-grandchild. And once again, we sit around that table, and what do? We remember. And we celebrate. Let me tell you a quick story, and then I'll close. I go to a great church. How often do you get to say that? I go to a great church. I go to St. Pat's Anglican. Pete Matthews is one of the finest preachers I've ever heard, and I'm so grateful for that. The good news about St. Pat's is it's a healthy, growing, passionate group of people. The bad news about St. Pat's is it is a young, growing, passionate, growing group of people. So we have no children's ministry, but I have children. In fact, I have perfect children. I have perfect, beautiful, talented, handful kind of children. So I want my children to love going to church. I wasn't saved in the church. This whole business about successfully raising church brats is kind of beyond me. I want them to love Jesus. So since there was no children's ministry and I was there, I wound up pioneering a children's ministry. Now, I have a PhD from Harvard, Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations. My expertise is comparative Semitics and archaeology. I am not good with little people. So I needed a kindergarten teacher to come in and train me in the mysteries of circle time and how you get kids to pay attention and all that good stuff. And we've done it. We have victory. And toddler church is a happening ministry. Come on over sometime. Well, when we go through the Passion Week with my little 3 and 5-year-olds, with my perfect daughters in the mix, I want them to know this story. And so we reenacted the Last Supper. We started doing this 2 years ago. I just got to do it last Sunday again. So I make a little loaf of really sweet cornbread and cut it up in cubes, and I get the grape juice, and I tell the story with the flannel graph with all us seated in a circle, and they're hanging on pins and needles because this is a new story to them, and they don't fall asleep during it. They really don't. And then I bring out the mysterious basket of bread and the special cup. And we talk about how Jesus' disciples each took a piece of bread and each took a sip from the cup. And my little toddlers all, as the napkin pulls back and they reach in and they pull out their little chunk of sweetened cornbread. And see, they're not old enough to take communion yet, but they're old enough to rehearse the story. And so I taught them to say something as they take their little chunk of bread. And my little one Noelle and my little one Elise have both walked through this process. But the first time was with Noelle. And so I watched this beloved of my soul take her little chunk of cornbread and say back to me what I told her to say, which is, I remember Jesus and I belong to Jesus. And then my little toddlers take their chunk of cornbread and then they take their sip of grape juice. And they turn to each other and say again, I remember Jesus and I belong to Jesus. Well, this toddler church teacher lost it. I'm sitting there with my toddlers in the circle enjoying their cool new early snack and I'm sobbing like a child because I'm hearing the voice of 3-year-olds saying what I know God is calling us to say today. I remember Jesus. And by the oath of the Lord of the cosmos, I belong to Jesus. Can you say that with me this week? Can you say it with me right now? Can you declare it in your heart? And can you let this Holy Week be for each of us what Jesus is calling it to be? As our band comes up, and they're coming quietly. This will work. Let's stand to our feet. And will you recite the oath with me that my 3-year-olds recite? Say it with me. I remember Jesus, and I belong to Jesus. Amen.